Lots of interesting storylines still surrounding, if you're into the legal side of things in the sporting world right now. The Bertuzzi-Moore settlement, is it official? Who knows? And more importantly, the Union for Junior Hockey and how Unifor is going to do this without taking any union dues from the players. What does this mean? We'll discuss it all with Rick Westhead, the TSN senior correspondent. Rick, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, just fine, thanks.
Let's start with Bertuzzi-Moore. I've been reading, you've been covering this case very well. Your understanding, is there an official settlement in place?
There's a settlement as far as the dollar value is concerned. We know that Steve Moore was suing Bertuzzi for $68 million, and last week they reached an agreement on how much Bertuzzi lawyer, insurance companies, the NHL, and the Canucks were going to have to pay. We don't know that amount hasn't actually been disclosed. We assume it's between $25 and $30 million based on the advice I've got from lawyers who specialize in this case. But it was interesting. You know, we heard from the Canucks, we heard from Bertuzzi's lawyer that there was a deal. We heard nothing from Steve Moore. And so a week later, I understand now that they're still trying to reach an agreement on the terms of the confidentiality agreement. What I understand from Bertuzzi's lawyer today is that Steve Moore is free to talk about the attack on ice, the fallout, and what it's meant for him over the last 10 years. What he cannot talk about are terms of the settlement, the dollar value, and according to Jeff Adair, Bertuzzi's lawyer, he can't disparage Bertuzzi in any way.
Okay. Now, from the lawyers you've talked to, out of that $25 to $30 million, how much is that in insurance paying? How much is the NHL and how much is Bertuzzi?
We don't know. That's okay. The simple answer is we just don't know. We do know Bertuzzi's made about $40 million in his NHL career. So, you know, based on that, he's probably taken home after taxes $25 to $30 million. I think that it's likely the insurance companies are bearing the brunt of this. But again, without, you know, firsthand information or being in that room, it's completely speculative.
Okay. Now, the Vancouver Canucks, now when you say the NHL, is that the Canucks or is the NHL paying their own thing and then the Canucks also paying their own?
No, this would be the Canucks. And the Canucks, like all teams, share the same insurance carriers. So, you know, in a way, this will cost the NHL. And what I mean by that, they might not be on the hook directly for paying out for this claim, but as anybody who has insurance knows, once you have a claim, what happens to your premiums in future years? So it could be that this impacts not only, you know, the Canucks moving forward, but every NHL team with higher insurance premiums. That's part of the story we haven't even gotten to yet.
Okay. Rick Westhead joins us. Now, the confidentiality, there's been a lot of speculation that the NHL won't want the number public because somehow it would impact concussion cases. Rick, my question about this was Steve Moore's career ended not due to a concussion, but a broken neck, correct?
Yeah, I haven't seen the medical reports. I know that he broke his neck, and he and his lawyers and medical team say that there are, kind of a flurry of consequences of that. A number of symptoms he has now that are concussion-like, whether that's, you know, a real difficulty focusing, having attention to detail, he's easily distracted. I've talked to him a few times in person, and I didn't get a sense that he was, he was fine during the conversation, but I can see why someone would say he has a short attention span now versus before. Although, again, the caveat is I didn't know Steve Moore 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really hard to say. Now, do you suspect from the lawyers you've talked to, Rick, would this be a one-time lump sum payment or would it be paid out over years?
That's a good question. It may be a one-time lump sum payment. One of the lawyers I talked to said it's not unusual in a situation like this where you have a clawback potentially. And what that means is, you know, if let's say just for argument's sake, it's a $30 million payout, and of that, a portion of it, let's say $10 million, is put into an account in trust. And so the lawyers would say, well, we'll give you this money only if you're not working and you're still facing the same health problems that prevent you from being able to get gainful employment in 5 years. And in 5 years, if you are working, then we'll keep that money. So obviously Steve Moore's lawyers are going to fight tooth and nail against that, and Bertuzzi's lawyers are going to try to put in as many of clauses like that as they can.
Okay. Now, would to say gainful employment, it couldn't be him just getting a job that pays him $60,000 a year, would it? Or would it have to be a certain, you know, like a guy who could make $200,000? Because I'm guessing if he was only going to make $60,000 a year, that would be a lot lower than what his average would be out in this payment.
Sure, yeah, and the devil's in the details here. I mean, some of this is just common sense, right? We know, you know, I know if you were a lawyer, if I was a lawyer, and our client or was in this situation, you'd be, you know, trying to make the argument that it's not good enough. Gainful employment does not mean that you're getting a job in the food court or driving a cab or something. It means a job in the field for which you're trained. And Steve Moore is a Harvard-educated guy. He's a you know, hockey player, sure, but he's also somebody whose degree would seem to make him a candidate for jobs in the investment banking or finance sector. And if I was his lawyer, I'd be making that case. I'd be saying if he's not getting a salary commensurate to that kind of employment, then he's not really gainfully employed.
TSN senior correspondent Rick Westhead joins us. Rick, the NHL, what sort of impact will this have long-term on instances? Like, I know this was a freak one, but do you think the NHL monitors this at all? How does it impact, you know, fights or anything else moving forward?
Well, I think we have been talking a lot more in recent months and years about the code, about vigilantism in the NHL. And I think that we can draw one conclusion, which is we're seeing less of that. And we're also seeing players talk and threaten each other off the ice far less. I can think of one instance since Steve Moore where we've had this. For the listeners who are too young to remember, after Steve Moore hit Marcus Naslund with a questionable body check, it was a war of words. Todd Bertuzzi said that Moore was a punk and he was glad that they had two games left against the Avalanche that season. Another player on Vancouver, said that there was a, what was tantamount to a bounty on Moore's head. So what we're seeing far less of, if any, are players who are, going to those extremes and making those types of threats in advance of games.
Rick, the other one is the CHL. And of course, now the CHL, no surprise to me, David Branch has come out and they're strongly against a players union. Now, I saw the other day, I think it was Waterloo who said they made $6.2 million, but after expenses, they cleared $116,000, which I was like, wow, it cost you that much money, but okay. Anyway, the your article told me that there would be no union dues for the players from Unicor on this. Where is it at? How is it moving forward? And is the CHL in for a legitimate fight this time?
I think so. Unicor is the largest private sector union in Canada, and they've been getting some advice from former NHL players and player agents and lawyers who, are now corporate lawyers but once played in the Ontario Hockey League or the other major junior leagues. I don't see this going away. I think that Unifor feels emboldened. They feel like they have the ear of the Ontario government. After all, Unifor campaigned against the provincial Tories in Ontario and helped Kathleen Wynne's government secure the election. So I don't know if you'd say there's a quid pro quo, but they definitely feel like the government is listening to Unifor. And, to your point about Waterloo, the Kitchener Rangers, this is what I think teams in any sport count on. What they say is, yeah, we've got a $6 million revenue in that case, but we only made $100,000 in profit. And they hope that's the end of the discussion. To me, I would actually like to dig into the numbers and see where that money goes. Why is it? Derry Dias was saying to me, you've got teams that are putting 8,000 fans into seats, charging $17 a ticket. Why can't one or two of those dollars go to players? And it's true that players do get educational packages, and that's true, and it's a development league. And I understand this is a really polarizing issue where people say these guys are looking to are looking to ruin the game. But I think that it's worth slowing down and having a discussion about this. So why is it, for instance, that the educational scholarships are forfeited if a player doesn't go to university within 18 months of his last junior game? I mean, Jason, put yourself in those kids' shoes. Wouldn't you like to have the chance to go and play in Europe for 2 or 3 years and then go to school after that? Who wants to make the decision within 18 months of finishing?
Oh, hey, Rick, I lived it firsthand with my brother. I know exactly what it's like. And I think it's, you know what, for the majority of players, you know, going to, if you want to, if the goal is to try to play pro hockey legitimately, you can't find out in 1 year. Because what say you play 1 year in the AHL and you have a pretty decent year as an AHL rookie, and now the team, okay, you know what, you're coming back, you're like, well, can I go and, sure, I can make $60,000 and keep fighting the dream, but I'm bypassing way more of that just in 4 years of college education. So, yeah, it's a very difficult decision, and a lot of guys have to kind of vacate their dream and we've seen stories of Burroughs and many others who are in the East Coast League for a few years, and they work their way up. So, yeah, I agree. I think there should be – I would easily have it if a guy plays pro, and if he signs an NHL contract – an entry-level deal, whatever it is, on a one, and he gets NHL money, not AHL money, then his, I can see his scholarship being void. He never gets it because that guy was making minimum of basically $800,000 a year for a few years.
Yeah, no question. And even, you know, it's one of the stats that really jumped out at me were what the number of players who do make it to the National Hockey League, how many of them actually make it to a second contract? And I think the number is between 6 and 10%, which was startlingly low to me. And if you don't, that means that you're finishing your pro hockey career, 24 or 25. Maybe your total lifetime earnings now are about $1 million, so $600,000 after tax. You are surely not set up for life. You're going to have to go and work again. I just wonder, again, why can't we have a discussion about allowing these kids 5 years or making it unlimited? Once they have the, you know, have put in their time in the major junior hockey, why can't they get that whenever they need it? And in fact, why does it have to be for education? Why can't we say if a player wants to be an entrepreneur and start up their own small business and they need a truck, why not be able to use it for that? Why limit it to education? I'm asking this question somewhat rhetorically because I know the answer. The answer is that the business model of major junior teams is that not all these players will exercise those educational contracts. And if they did, then it would be a lot harder for some teams to keep turning a profit.
Yeah. No, and I understand that, and maybe there's got to be some sort of meet in the middle or benefit it. But it's pretty obvious, Rick, because I've always heard the argument is, well, these kids shouldn't get paid. No one's asking them to get paid and give them extra dollars, because I agree. If they were 18 and suddenly they were getting $500 a week, well, they're just going to blow that money, so that doesn't do anybody any good. It's better to give them afterwards when they're done.
Yeah, and I think it's worth the discussion. I was 18, you were 18 once, and I would have loved to make $500 and hope a week and or a month, and hopefully these kids, you know, the one thing you hear again and again from OHL executives or Western Hockey League executives is that when they're emailing players, they're also emailing the parents of players because they're hoping that kids are getting good advice from the parents. I would hope that's the same thing. If we do see this evolve into a situation where players are either being paid or, you know, receiving some other sort of stipend, you know, hopefully the players are getting good counsel from their parents while they're still teenagers about what to do with that cash.
Yeah, definitely. It's this story's not going away, Rick. I don't think at all. Have you heard? Does the CHL, when do they start being seriously concerned, or are they already seriously concerned?
Well, again, this is in the story that's up on TSN.ca, and we've got copies of emails that the CHL president David Branch has sent to players and their parents over the last 2 months. And to the Reader's Digest version is he's been urging players that to take a moment and consider, because they do not have to sign union cards. That's interesting because in Quebec, some players have already signed union cards. Branch has also advised players they don't have to give out their personal information to anyone, and they don't have to attend any non-sanctioned team events away from the arena. But I think that these emails, you know, he would argue that this is just standard. It's improving communication before a season. But player agents that I talked to and Dias, they believe that this is, you know, far more telling, and that it shows that the officials of these leagues are really worried about where this might end up.
It's going to be an interesting one to see how it goes. I appreciate your time, Rick.
Yeah, thanks for your interest. Talk to you later.